On today's College Football Inquirer, a court ruling leads to a good old-fashioned quarterback competition like your grandpa used to watch at the University of Tennessee. We'll break that down. Plus, could Army-Navy move to Thanksgiving weekend, and could that be the key to unlocking a more elegant college football schedule that does not stretch almost to February? We'll talk about it all today on the College Football Inquirer. This is the College Football Inquirer with Ross Dellinger and Stephen Godfrey. I am Andy Staples. And guys, the court is leading to something interesting on the field, which sometimes that happens. But I feel like this has become more of a public affairs reporting podcast where we talk that this court decision happened and this court decision happened. Yeah. Well, a court People decision happened on Friday. And I'm more interested in what happens on the football field after this. So back up, Joey Aguilar, Tennessee quarterback. They got him in a trade for Nico Iamaleava. He won another year at Tennessee. Tennessee was pretty cool with that. He goes to court to try to get it. Knoxville judge seemed like it'd be okay. Nope. Knoxville judge denies Joey Aguilar that extra year in court on Friday, which leads to Ross and Godfrey, something we talked about on Thursday's show that never happens anymore.
Yeah. Quarterback, old-fashioned quarterback battle. Yeah. Maybe that's what the judge really wanted. Maybe that's he wanted to see the Vols have a big quarterback battle. What was funny about that reaction is what we saw a week before in Pittsboro, Mississippi, right, was like a judge that was obviously very connected to Ole Miss and the sort of the way that whole trial played out with the judge getting emotional as he read the ruling and then
I still
then
think he was Trinidad, just tired after reading for an hour.
Trinidad signing stuff and all the invocation praying for an extended year of eligibility. Like all that that we saw
seems normal.
Clearly sort of this biased John Grisham type of playing out was kind of like the opposite, right? We saw during the Nashville hearing or Knoxville hearing, which was a judge that was like kind of skewering the attorney. And then we see a ruling that kind of does the opposite of from the fan base. You saw the outpouring from the Ole Miss fans of, right, thank you, judge, you know, all that stuff. You saw, like, I think I saw a couple of social media messages from the Tennessee fan base of whoever, I forgot the judge's name there, but apparently it's an elected position. So a lot of the Tennessee fans are, all right, guys, we've got to get together the next, when he goes for runs for re-election, we can't forget that he denied and ruined our season.
What was his alma mater? I'm sure someone has this.
Tennessee.
I thought it was Tennessee. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it was Tennessee.
Yeah.
So he's a bad Vol.
No, and the thing is,
you thought one of us.
He's going to get his ribs spit in at Calhoun's.
Yeah. Yeah, judge in the Charles Bediako case at Alabama, both went to the schools involved and both, quote unquote, betrayed the schools involved. But I'm not sure how mad the Tennessee, because as Ross pointed out, this was not an overwhelming sentiment from Vol Twitter, which Vol Twitter, when it gets on something, does not let go. It is a dog with a bone. These guys, I think, are kind of excited because they've got a couple of very heavily recruited quarterbacks. One is a redshirt freshman. One is a true freshman. George McIntyre and Faison Brandon. They're going to go at it this spring. And Godfrey brought this up on Thursday's show, and it's fascinating because we just don't see this anymore. Mm-mm. These are two quarterbacks who were recruited out of high school by this school. Like, when's the last time we saw this?
Yeah.
This is what I was curious about, because either outcome of this decision was going to create something that doesn't really exist anymore. Now, had Joey Aguilar been cleared to play, I think we would have had a true college football first that I played out on the show, right? So you have the incumbent starter who's back, who you would probably trust the most opening week. And I don't have their schedule in front of me, but it's not a soft opening for Tennessee.
They have Georgia Tech at Georgia Tech week two.
Yeah.
Their SEC opening is Texas and Auburn coming to Knoxville in weeks 4 and 5.
So it's, you know, you would want someone with game experience. But I started to think, you know, is college football going to create some sort of NFL model where you draft the future quarterback of the franchise, you sign the veteran and the veteran starts 6, 7, 8, 9 games into a, 17-game schedule. And then eventually you sort of graduate in the rookie in what is clearly a transition year. With best case scenario is you would then exit that season with one of these rookies, if you will, at Tennessee, poised to take the reins. Now, in college football, what you would be really mortgaging, I think, is the idea that Tennessee could go to the playoff this year, which would be 2 years in a row after going in the first year of the 12. We all know that this is a volatile fan base. I'll be nice this morning, okay? Would they tolerate?
I don't think I'm being mean by saying they're incredibly demanding. Like, I have said that the Tennessee head coach job is the highest pressure job in sports other than like New York Yankees manager. I think it's a higher pressure job than Alabama coach.
There's a lot of, I don't want to bog the segment down. There's a lot of reasons for that. Like geography, the fact that there's no pro, like that part of the state of Tennessee where I'm at is like, there's no pro teams. It's Tennessee football, sometimes women's basketball. And until Vitello had baseball going, like it was a year-round concern, which is a problem when Tennessee wasn't living up to their standards. So all of that being said, now, of course, we don't have the Aguilar. We don't have the weird NFL situation. Although I do think someone's going to have to reckon with that eventually in college football, but the way we're bringing back veteran quarterbacks. But now,
well, and,
we
and
have
Tennessee a, almost did. Remember, Tennessee tried to get Sam
Levis.
Yeah,
Levitz. They tried
not like,
to get.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So. But
brought
okay.
on a visit. Yeah.
Let's say it was Aguilar. Let's say it was Levitt. What are we doing here? I'm fascinated. What that signals to me is that this Tennessee program believes they have to be in a win now mode, that they cannot float out another transition year. And by the way, none of us would fault Heupel and staff for what happened last year. You lost your quarterback was probably going to be your best player last year in Nico. You lost him in the spring. You bring in a transfer. I thought they acquitted themselves admirably. Think about how close they were against Georgia in September, right? Like this was a good season, all things considered. Any way you cut this, whether Joey was back, whether they got Sam Levitt or one of these freshmen starting, you are in a transition year again. You have to set up a quarterback to be successful in the SEC. We just saw this happen with Arch Manning at Texas. It is not easy. I don't care if the kid's got 11 stars next to his name. It is not easy to transition in a young quarterback into this league. So you have to somehow adjust the expectations this season for one of these kids, either Faison or the McIntyre kid, to eventually, like, do we think one of these kids is just going to win the battle in July and August outright and then start every snap this fall? Probably not, right? There's going to be some level of back and forth.
Yeah.
Yeah. And who knows? I mean, it depends on how things go. They might go into the season playing both of them.
Yeah, they might go into fall camp with the battle still continuing, potentially to prevent anybody from leaving, even though there's no spring portal, let's be honest, right? We're going to probably see some sort of movement in the spring.
But had they
got
Levitt,
to the degree we've seen in the past.
Ross, if they got Levitt or if they kept Aguilar, would they have not risked losing both of them?
Into January portal, they probably
Yeah, this is the question I kept asking Vols fans that I knew was like, hey, guys, aren't you?
Yeah.
You're going to be jammed up here and you're going to mortgage your future to try and make get in as like a 10 seed this year. Is your defense ready for that? You're in the first year of a Jim Knowles system.
Unknown. He did bring some players from Penn State, but that doesn't guarantee that they get. I mean, Ohio State took a couple of years with a bunch of veteran, really good players, took a couple of years to really grasp it. The other thing is they're sinking a lot of money into these quarterbacks. It's not like signing high 4-star, 5-star type quarterbacks is cheap. So there's a lot of money invested in that room already. And that was the thing with the Levitt deal. That's the one that set the alarm bells off. And you know, you'll hear people say, oh, they were just trying to drive the price up on LSU. They were just trying to make it harder for a conference rival. No, they wanted Sam Levitt, which if they had gotten Sam Levitt, they would have had to pay him more than $5 million for this year. They would have been paying whatever they're paying George McIntyre and Faison Brannon, which I would assume is high six, low seven figures for both of them, for each of them. And that's the other part. I don't know what the plan is. And it's interesting because I will give Josh Heupel and company a little grace on this because they had a plan. Like, their original plan was, we are going to go all in, big time, NIL money on high school quarterbacks. And the first big high school quarterback contract that actually got paid, shout out Jaden Rashada, is Nico Amaliaba. They had Nico. He redshirted. He was the starter. They went to the playoff. He was supposed to come back for his second year as the starter. And after spring practice, he bolts. So, like, the plan was that always going to be that this either Nico was going to have a great year last year and go pro, and you'd have George and Faison going to battle for this job right now, or Nico would still be there for one more year, and they would then battle it out for the starting job in 27. That got squelched. The fact that Aguilar was good in the offense was a happy accident.
Mm. Do you think that's going to scare away the coaches who have the similar plan of spending big on high school quarterbacks? I wonder if, like, this situation and just in general, the success that we've seen from veteran transfer sort of quarterbacks, especially in the playoff, I wonder if that's going to change the way coaches who were going to lean on high schools.
Miami's quarterback that is a 4-star, but if you look at where he falls in the national rankings, he's much lower than these other guys at the schools that are competing for playoff spots. And Miami has made it clear. They've said, we're a transfer quarterback school. They planted the flag. And I think that's a better use. Like, if that's what you want to be that and use your resources that way. Don't try to be both, because if you are, you're just going to end up wasting money.
LSU seems like they planted a similar flag the last several years, too.
Yeah, I think when you combine the Ole Miss years, that's a Kiffin Indiana philosophy. Like, Kiffin's going to find an experienced hot hand who can handle that playbook as fast as possible. He does not want to develop anybody. I think if you look at the Ole Miss years now, plus what they've done at LSU, I think that's the signature. Now, this is going to backfire on somebody. It's one of these teams that's over-indexed on paying a roster in 2026 is going to have a bad time with a transfer quarterback, and this is going to cause people to reevaluate. It's just going to happen. Like, the math tells us that one of these transfer quarterbacks at one of these programs with national title expectations is going to have a bad time, and then they're going to be stuck without an experienced quarterback. And guess what, Andy?
Or if you've rotated, hurt. Yeah.
Yeah. No. Same thing. But if you keep rotating transfers like this Miami philosophy, for instance, and one goes bust, does that mean that you turn around and say, all right, well, now we're going to take a freshman, we're going to develop him over a couple years? All of this boils down to, it's not the development philosophy. This boils down to one thing. And it doesn't matter if you're Miami or if you're Tennessee with differing quarterback philosophies. What you are telling us, and what I guess what the fans are telling you inside the coaching establishment, is zero patience. Win now all the time. Automatically win now all the time. And that expectation doesn't really reward either philosophy, because quarterback play is not a constant at the collegiate level, right? If you take an Arch Manning, you have to develop him. And then if you're constantly spinning the dial on a transfer, you're not always going to get Will Howard or Fernando Mendoza winning you a national title. We're going to have a situation here, I'm going to go ahead and predict this, where a veteran transfer, maybe it's Sam Levitt, I don't know, is going to underperform relative to the expectations on a financially loaded team, and it's going to cause a lot of these programs to reevaluate. We kind of saw it at Texas Tech last year. I mean, that was
they reevaluated because they had the homegrown quarterback who turned out to not be good enough at the level that they needed him to be, and they went out and got the guy in the portal. They went out and got Brendan Sorsby.
Am I just getting rid of everything I've learned from coaches the entire time I've been doing this gig, that, no offense to Cincinnati, but Brendan Sorsby is going to be poised for greatness? I'm asking here.
No, it's a legitimate question. No,
yeah.
Joey McGuire will tell you, and I had Joey McGuire on my On3 show last week, that's the guy they ID'd, that's the guy they wanted. And the thing is, we can say that now, but then somebody can just come back and say, okay, did you see that out of Fernando Mendoza leaving Cal? Did you know Fernando Mendoza was going to be that good when he left Cal? And the answer is no. None of us predicted that.
Well, it's going to be interesting to look back on the very high price, the highest price we've ever seen cycle of quarterback transfer this past year, and sort of see how they did, right? Levitt at LSU, Sorsby at Texas Tech, Indiana. His name is escaping me. TCU quarterback.
Josh Hoover.
Hoover.
Yeah, Josh Hoover at Indiana. Am I missing any more really high profile quarterbacks? It'd be interesting to look back, you know, this time
there were actually, it felt like there were fewer Darian Mensah going to Miami.
Yes, I mean, of course. Yeah,
Mensah. I feel like every person that you just named should write Fernando Mendoza a thank you note.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because they made at least a couple million more because of what he did in the national championship game.
Well, and there was such a small group, to Andy's point, like it just wasn't, it was a small group. And as somebody who was sort of in this market mentioned to me during the market, it's just, it wasn't a very talented, as future, as past years, it wasn't a very talented like pool. So thus, actually, the price got higher because it was such a small pool.
Guess what that's called? And guess what that's called?
Lane tried to get Damon Williams into the pool. That would have added more talent. That's ends up staying at Washington.
That's Jaren the Kirk Cousins
on Politelli. Yeah. We had Tosh Lapoy on my On Three show. The story he tells of his first day on the job at Cal, where he gets up in the team meeting and he's gonna call out JKS and say, "We need you," and JKS isn't there. And Tosh scraps the rest of the day and books a commercial flight to Hawaii.
And quarterbacks are important.
Winds up at JKS at like 1 a.m. Hawaii time, hammering out a deal. Like that. That's how important this is. And but to your point, people staying. So Damon Williams, JKS, Arch Manning obviously wasn't going anywhere. The quarterbacks who people feel have the highest upside wound up staying where they are.
Mm-hmm. Well, Damon Williams stayed because he had to.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Right, he stayed.
Yeah.
You can argue the reasons why, but he stayed.
He stayed because the lawyers told him to. Know what all this sounds like? This sounds like the Kirk Cousins contract. I'm trying to think of another veteran quarterback that's just constantly over-indexing on, his value.
You know why that is? When is the last time a legitimately good NFL quarterback hit free agency? It does not happen. And possibly we're seeing the college football market, which is evolving very quickly but tracking exactly the same way the NFL one does.
Yeah.
It may be that when you have a guy who seems good, a JKS type player, a Damon Williams type player, you will do whatever you can to make sure that person does not leave.
Did you guys ever get this phenomenon when you start with like years ago in college football? You know, we're college football centric year round. And then you would start to do like NFL radio about this time of year because the draft people would start asking. And what I noticed every single year that I ever did this was that the NFL draft people would always start with this incredibly overinflated focus on quarterbacks that we knew were not going to pan out. Like I remember specifically having arguments on the radio and being like, "Guys,
Trubisky.
Ryan Tannehill is not going to be your solution," you know, stuff like that. And this is now the top end of college is doing the same thing. It feels like, we got into a bidding war for Sam Levitt and Brendan Sorsby. What? This is normal? Okay. Okay.
So maybe it boomerangs back the other way, because interestingly enough, a coach who we all like and who every time a job opens, we say, you got to call him and make him say no, Marcus Freeman. Freeman rents Sam Hartman. He rents Riley Leonard. And now they have CJ Carr, who they developed themselves.
Yeah.
They got two more freshmen coming in this year who are very highly rated. It feels like Notre Dame is trying to go back to the old model.
Yeah.
While you develop a guy for two?
Yeah. I mean, if we go back, look at what happened with Damon, don't think that's not going to be replicated by all the other schools in conferences, what the Big Ten has done with their agreement. So if you think about there's going to be more players sort of locked in the future, you better start developing your high school players because there might not be a pool left.
So hit on a five-star that you really believe in. Basically get better at evaluation. Lock him in as a freshman. And for the first 2 years, go out and spend money on one-year rentals.
It's like starting a bourbon company. You can't start an bourbon company.
I know what that
you're gonna have to explain. Unless you buy juice from somebody else.
You're going to have to explain that, Andy, to the people who don't know.
It's like starting a bourbon company.
Okay, bourbon is aged. Bourbon must be aged.
Yeah. Yes.
And you can't just say, I'm starting a bourbon company today, and then figure out your mash bill, and all of a sudden you're bottling bourbon. Because what you get, you know, right away is
you
white lightning,
you're just
which
gonna
tastes like
started
crap.
12 years ago.
Yeah.
Or 12 years from now.
But what but if you start a bourbon company, if you want to start one now and have a product within a couple of years, you can buy you can buy juice, as they call it, from other distilleries. So that's Sam Hartman and Riley Leonard at Notre Dame while CJ Carr was in the barrel.
Yeah. But when Carr completes, you need to go out, find another high school talent that you want to build around, and then get back into the rental cycle for 2 years. I think it's 2-2.
Well, no. But Noah Grubbs is coming from my alma mater, Lake Mary High School in Lake Mary, Florida. Led him to a state championship. He's a freshman at Notre Dame who just enrolled. They also
so you're
had
saying,
another quarterback reclassify from 27 to 26.
Now
those
you don't need
your
to
CJ
do that.
Carr
he, yeah, he's saying you don't.
So you're
really
saying
need
rental,
to do
rental.
That
so
now.
Rental 1 year, rental second year. Guy that you developed under them, then you start a cycle of quarterback
development
underneath that.
Yeah,
that's
you start to say, yeah, that's the thought. Yeah. Now, if I'm sure if somebody comes along, again, it depends on how the contracts and how the whole model changes, right? If these players are going to be locked in to their deals or if we're going to end up getting collective bargaining, blah, 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 whatever. But like, so that all that could change, but like, I would think the development is where you want to be, seeing where what happened with the DeMond situation. In others in this pool, was very shallow of quarterbacks this past year for a reason. Either they didn't want to leave their school or they couldn't, like DeMond couldn't leave their school. So I think everybody's got to be sort of on the lookout for, back to developing your quarterback on
the
on
problem,
staff.
Andy, is that that's a fantastic system and Marcus Freeman might be capable of doing it because of the Notre Dame brand and yada, yada, yada echoes.
And people want to get the Notre Dame degree. So they'll happily staying 3-4 years.
Except like history tells us, all it takes is one Pete Golding or Lane Kiffin phone call. And suddenly the kid who's supposed to be finishing his sophomore year on the bench, ascending junior, takes $11 million and goes and plays for an SEC team. And now your cycle's broken. You got to get back into the rental business and restart it again.
But that's why you keep signing the old way with multiples. You don't just have one waiting in the wings. Because who's Kentucky's starting quarterback this year, guys? Kenny Minchie.
Yeah. That's right.
Kenny Minchie lost the quarterback derby at Notre Dame to CJ Carr. Yeah. Apparently it was close, but CJ Carr won, and CJ Carr's the guy, at least for this year too. So Kenny Minchie had to go find somewhere to play.
You know what?
But that means Noah Grubbs now goes into that that cycle.
Both systems and every hypothetical that we've posed, they all have one thing in common. You're tying money up at the quarterback position.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you have to decide what the best use of your resources is. Because I kept thinking this is going to drive down the price of the freshman. And I would bet it's maybe flattened it, but not driven it down. And it's going to go back up as quality veterans are not available in future years.
Well, that's where, Andy, we're going to see maybe more of the quarterback movement is the guy who lost the battle, right? Like a Minchie, or maybe what we see at Tennessee or something like that. That end, the G6 quarterback, right, who like has a breakout year and doesn't have some long-term big money contract who can be on the move. By the way, segue super quickly into something that Godfrey just, he just mentioned Lane Kiffin and Pete Golding calling players.
Oh, yes.
And that's a good segue into a quick thing that happened yesterday, which was the NCAA Vice President of Enforcement, John Duncan, sending around a letter to all the schools warning them about tampering and that the NCAA will pursue tampering and pursue significant penalties against those who are tampering. A lot of schools have already gotten letters of sort of inquiry from the NCAA about potential tampering. We know about the Dabo Swinney situation targeting Pete Golding in Ole Miss. I think we're going to start to see more of that. It's going to be fascinating to see how stiff the penalties.
The question
that
is,
the NCAA
does Ole Miss turn in LSU?
Yeah, that's right.
That's the big one right there.
I'm going to guess that's likely.
So we know Pete Golding's on the hook because Dabo's already said he's going to turn him in, or he's turned him in. I imagine this. Well, I saw the snippet you tweeted out, Ross, and it was very strongly worded. I believe it invoked the name of the Ball State president who might form a committee to explore the possibility of streamlining the rules.
An infractions monetization task force, Andy.
I want that John.
Oh, a task force.
Task force.
That'll get him.
I want that John Duncan exit interview when he finally leaves that position, because that man has been at the catbird seat of the Keystone Cops.
He's seen
for
a lot.
Long time.
He's seen it all. Yeah, he's seen it all.
You want to talk about somebody talk about the feeling like your job isn't worth anything.
Go ahead, Ross. If the NCAA does, you know, have some strong penalties, what are strong penalties, you might ask? Yeah. Suspension of a head coach for a game. Pretty strong.
Mm-hmm. Ole Miss doesn't need a head coach to win games.
If they do levy that will impact everything we're talking about. You would think, right? That will impact a lot of what we're talking about.
It will, you know, if they actually do it.
If they actually do it.
The sound you heard yesterday when that letter hit the email boxes of all the various compliance directors was a wanking motion being made by all the head coaches.
The reason, here's the problem, and this is what Duncan and those guys have never understood. It's mutually assured destruction, because once you pull the thread, to Andy's point, it can't stop. If you get Pete Golding, he's going to turn around and give you Lane Kiffin. He's going to turn around and give you X. They're going to turn around and give you Y. They're turning around and give you Z. You would essentially be suspending. I don't think people realize this, and I'm the guy who wrote the Bagman story, and everybody thought I was full of it in 2014 or 13 or whatever. Everybody does this.
Wait,
all the
not
time.
Everybody. Not every, and when we come back,
not
we're going to talk about one of the, nope.
That's why Dabo's going to have a new
job
next
Dabo.
Year.
Not just Dabo. We're going to talk about one of the four coaches, Dabo's one of them, one of the four coaches who won't be turned in for tampering, and what he said that could unlock a change in the schedule for all of college football.
One of the four.
Godfrey just got it. You'll get it when we come back. We are back to College Football Inquirer. Are we talking about potential tampering inquiries? And then we mentioned four coaches will not be turned in for tampering. One is Dabo Swinney.
Because
he's just, that's not his bag, baby.
At least while he's still employed.
Right. At least for now. No. He may change his mind if nothing happens.
It's a big buyout.
Three who will not be are the coaches at Army, Navy, and Air Force, because you really can't transfer in midstream. Not really possible. Jeff Munkin is the coach at Army. He wasn't talking about this because, let's face it, he ain't worried about it. But he was talking about when the Army-Navy game gets played, which has been considered holy sacred ground in terms of college football. When does the Army-Navy game get played? Well, you have your championship weekend, and then the following weekend, the day you give out the Heisman Trophy, that Saturday, you play that game at 3:30 p.m. Eastern time on CBS. It's in D.C. or Philadelphia or in the Meadowlands. It is a spectacle. It is beautiful. Sometimes it is snowing. Lots of people watch it. Millions of people watch it on TV. And it has been considered one of those things you cannot touch. So this is a very interesting comment from Jeff Munkin to Seth Emerson of The Athletic. He's open to potentially playing it on Thanksgiving weekend.
Yeah, a big comment. Godfrey, I know, has a lot of knowledge about how the placement of this game and when you are at, you know, one of these military institutions saying that you're going to move this game. I went to this game for the first time this past year, and it was like the pageantry and the atmosphere was everything that was hyped up to be. And so for him to come out and actually say this, yeah, it was pretty jarring. But we know for two reasons. One specifically, they've got to find a way to move the game. And that's because they're going to expand the playoff eventually, and they want to use that weekend for playoff games at some point.
And the other piece of it is, even if they keep the playoff this number of rounds, a lot of people would like to move the schedule. And we had Joey McGuire, the Texas Tech coach, on my On3 show last week, and he said, stop worrying about all these crazy things you need to do to move the portal to the spring. And this, if you can get the season over with by the first week of January, it solves a lot of the other problems.
Football is supposed to be played in the first semester. And every other division, like FCS, they played their national championship on January 5th. Like, it's amazing that we can't do that, that we haven't figured that out yet. And so my, what I would do is I would move 0 week. So this last year, everybody would have played August 23rd. And we would have played it out like that. The conference championship game would have been on Thanksgiving. That would have been a great Thanksgiving weekend. And then you start playing the playoffs the next week. If you have a bye, you have a true bye, just like it is in the regular season. It's a bye. And then you're playing every 6 to 7 days. And you're, if you did it that way this year, you actually would have had the national championship on January 1st.
So Joey McGuire's thing is move week one to where week zero is now. He said, so this year you'd be playing games August 23rd. Everybody be playing games August 23rd, which moves the championship weekend games to Thanksgiving weekend, moves the rivalry weekend games to the third weekend in November. And the thing is, what Joey McGuire, what Monken says makes sense, because they want the 4-hour protected window still. Well, if you put that 4-hour protected window on Black Friday, and you have conference championship games or play-in games or whatever the conference commissioners want to do with that weekend, and then the next week you start the playoff.
Yeah.
You could theoretically get the game. Like this year, as Joe McGuire pointed out, the championship game would have been January 1st in that scenario. Mm-hmm. You could make that work.
Not sure we'll ever see that, but...
Yeah, I think they would like to stretch it out maybe one more week after that if they could.
All these coaches, they all agreed, right? I remember Dan Lanning said this to me back at Pac-12 Media Day back in July. Move up everything and have the championship game on January 1. I think the most hope is to have the semifinals on January 1. That's probably the most realistic.
That'd be fine. Have the semifinals January 1st, and then you have it, the championship game the following Monday. Whenever, Monday.
The Mondays. Like, I know that's not the point of the segment, but like ESPN's never going to let us get out of that Monday nonsense, are they?
No, especially not now, because ESPN has Monday Night Football. The point is Monday Night Football ends. You get a playoff. You get the national championship game.
They won't do it on New Year's Day, Andy. You're right. They'll make it the Monday after the end of the regular season.
I also think the Monday NFL playoff game, the Monday night NFL playoff game, might be going away too.
Yeah.
Well, by the way, the NFL is a part owner of ESPN now.
Pac-12 Media Day was Big Ten Media Day. Want to make sure everybody knows Oregon's not in the Pac-12 anymore.
You won't piss anyone off on the West Coast. That's fine. Yeah, a lot of things here. One, I want to acknowledge that the fact this is being said out loud by a sitting Army head coach indicates to me that they're having a lot of discussions about this at West Point in Annapolis. And I don't, like, I've known Jeff Monken a long time. He's a pretty calculated guy. I don't think he would just go out on a branch and say this without having talked to the myriad superiors that you have when you're a football coach at West Point. The impact of this game moving is not like any other game in football, period. The amount of individuals who are involved in this, from the Pentagon to the Joint Chiefs to the massive amount of DOD contractors, like, there's so much money, power, and influence in that stadium when this game is played. It is a really, really big deal. However, I do think that the athletic directors and the people who are responsible for the athletic programs at these two institutions know their days are numbered on having a completely unrivaled weekend. They're acknowledging that privately. They're having to message that inside their own sort of networks in a very delicate way, because there's a lot of people. It's kind of like how the Ivies and like school presidents are completely naive and don't understand sports. You have a different version of that within the armed forces, and they don't understand that where Army Navy actually kind of ranks in the college football pantheon. It's a very delicate situation because people get really pissed off in the military world. But my guess is that if Monken is saying this publicly, it's being discussed internally. All they really want is an unopposed slot. And I said this to Andy last night when this news came out, I think it's possible that for the first time ever, if you walked in and planted a flag and said, Andy, what'd you say, Black Friday primetime or Black Friday afternoon?
Black Pick Friday, 3:30.
All right, 3:30 on Black Friday. The NFL will respect that. The NFL is now a part owner of ESPN. Like, again, we're closing the ownership circle tighter and tighter. I do think that the NFL would respect Army-Navy and stay off of that spot. They're not going to care about the Egg Bowl
on Black Friday, but I don't think they want more of Black Friday.
There's
a lot of
college games on Black Friday,
yeah,
too.
There are, yeah.
You're talking about college.
But if you're doing this,
but they wouldn't be on Black Friday.
They're not doing this in a vacuum. They're not moving it to Black Friday just for
They would not have an opposite Black Friday. Nebraska, Iowa. What this would be either be the faux championship weekend. That's probably the best thing you can do, except they are both American members.
That's a weird thing if one of them is in the American championship game, which they have been.
Right.
So that's the other issue, because if championship weekend is that weekend, they can't participate in the championship game if they're playing their game. So that's the other part you got to figure out. But like what Joey said is fine, but ESPN and Fox are not going to move. Like Fox is not going to move Michigan, Ohio State or allow it to be moved. ESPN is not going to allow Alabama, Auburn to be moved to another date unless they know that there's enough inventory to cover that weekend and keep them whole.
The only modification I would make here, Andy, is that we do everything that you're saying, everything that Joey McGuire said, Army and Navy want to play ball. That's great. We also get rid of conference championships. If we do that, we have enough space to breathe.
That's the plan, but you have to have inventory that weekend. So whether that's
like
conference championship games or play-in games or bracket busters, whatever that's like.
Yeah.
The Duke-Michigan basketball game in Washington this weekend was great. How cool would that be? Like two teams that are kind of on the cut line for the college football playoff get together and play on that week?
I know that something I experienced this year, and I went out and like talked to people in the real world, not other college football reporters, because we're an incestuous bunch sometimes intellectually. People were fatigued in late January about the playoff dragging on. This isn't just a complaint from school presidents or from coaches. I do think that we all live in different parts of we're all from different parts of the South. Ross is in DC, but that was his choice. When it's July and August. When it's July and August, the demand for college football peaks. We all know this from running our various businesses and shows. And everybody gets their Phil Steele and everybody starts to freak out. Moving earlier into the August window, I think would actually bear a lot of fruit in terms of revenue, in terms of viewership. There is a fatigue point for casual college football viewers, and there are a lot as it drags into the mess of January and the NFL playoffs and playing these games, these vitally important world-changing college football semifinal games on a random Thursday night. That sucks. Right. I talked to Miami fans and Ole Miss fans.
This would alleviate, because if you've got the semis being played on January 1st, which is traditionally a college football holiday, then you're in good shape.
One thing like we maybe didn't spend time with and people don't probably understand is the Army-Navy game as it relates to the playoff and sort of the discussion of what happened this past year. When there was momentum, it felt like, to go finally to go to the 16-team playoff. And on that weekend of Army-Navy, there was a thought that the first round of the playoff, which really was like going to be of a 16-team playoff, was going to be like a two-game play-in game style deal. The 16 seed was going to play the 13 seed, and the 14 seed was going to play the 15 seed on Army-Navy weekend. And so Army-Navy, when that discussion was going on and getting pretty serious, Army-Navy was arguing, we need a carve-out so you can automatically exempt us from being a 14, 15, 16, 13 seed, you know? Automatically have a bye into the second round or the old, you know, the new first round, whatever you want to call it. And that probably isn't going to happen.
Yeah, that's the line I would draw.
But we saw the president of the United States the Saturday night before the college football playoff had their big meeting. All the commissioners had their big meeting in Miami, we saw him tweet out the about preserving the Army-Navy game and about preserving the window, the four-hour window. And I think that's because the Army-Navy folks probably knew they weren't going to get a carve-out to be exempt from that opening weekend if they made the playoff, if one of them made the playoff. And they were going to have to figure out where to play and move the Army-Navy game. So I think they've been thinking, Andy, all fall about where to move this game. And there was a discussion about week zero, to move the game to week zero. There's been a discussion about Thanksgiving, obviously. Why can't the game be played on Thanksgiving night and be the college game on Thanksgiving
definitely
night?
Definitely could. It definitely that, could.
Yeah, because Texas and A&M don't want to play there anymore.
I'm going to tell you right now, nobody wants to play on Thanksgiving, I feel like. Ross, I'm going to tell you right now, the same people who went and whined to the president, who, by the way, just because the president tweets something out, actually, there's a higher probability it won't happen at this point.
yeah, probably.
The same people who went and tattled to Trump are going to absolutely throw down against being out of their homes and in Philadelphia or Baltimore on Thanksgiving night. You and I are veterans of the Egg Bowl.
Yeah. Yeah.
Most people, like, everybody wants to watch a good college football game on Thursday night. Nobody really wants it to be their teams, their programs leaving on Thanksgiving to go tailgate. I think the NFL is going to, the other reason is they won't get a carve out that night, Ross. The NFL wouldn't move off of Thanksgiving night because of the viewership it's received. Yeah. So I think that putting it some, maybe it's Black Friday, maybe it's that Saturday. I think that's likelier.
It's hard to carve out though. Like I was thinking carve out. I was thinking the 4 hour exclusive window for college. I wasn't even thinking about NFL.
Yeah, and they don't want to go against the NFL though, because that would
the deal with CBS would be impacted.
Surely
the NFL
is the only football game.
The NFL will not position themselves. They will not let this, even in the court of public perception, they will not let this progress to a point where it looks like it's the NFL versus Army Navy. The NFL stays buku connected to the armed forces community for a lot of public posturing and pablum. Like, you go up into the northeastern United States, the most popular apparel brand is that salute to service, like Giants, Patriots gear. Like, the NFL will not position itself against the armed forces, and they will make sure that it doesn't even get that far. That's why I don't think it would be on Thanksgiving night.
The other piece of this, and we've talked about this on our text chain a little bit, and I think we brought it up on the show, but the other piece that makes this interesting that is somewhat new is the NFL and ESPN deal has gone through, where the NFL is now a partial owner of ESPN. They own an equity stake in ESPN, which makes the NFL partial owner of college football playoff broadcast rights. I think there will be collaboration between the NFL and the CFP from this point forward, because it's in the NFL's business interest for that to succeed.
Yeah. The NFL, which has spent decades avoiding its minor league system and ducking, shirking responsibility at every turn, is now a partial owner of the college football postseason. So the next time ESPN PR wants to send me a tersely worded email about how I'm seeing ghosts about conspiracies, I can tell you where to put that email.
Where, Godfrey, where?
Say it one more time, guys. The NFL is now a partial owner of the college football playoff via a television network.
Yeah.
This is what we're dealing with.
But you're saying it like it's a bad thing, which ultimately may be.
No,
but
the NFL might be the
right
most organized gangster
really
on the block.
Because the NFL is the boogeyman.
Yes.
Yeah.
The NFL is, hey, they're corrupt as hell, awful, Craven, Ray Rice, whatever. We can talk about James Pierce. Fine. They're also really good at organizing things. Okay?
Yeah.
Like, they're effective.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Let them get in here and suss it out.
Yeah. One of the things we've been discussing here with Army Navy, a good segue here, Andy, is that about week zero and moving up the season, and certainly week zero will be a topic of discussion this week in Indianapolis at NCAA committee meetings. Which we love to discuss a good committee meeting, don't we?
That's right. They will be discussing all this, and they'll be discussing the targeting rule. They'll be discussing the scourge of shorty shorts being worn by various kickers. Well,
the important things.
Are we doing the shorty shorts on Thursday?
And he wore the shortest of shorty shorts.
Are we doing the shorty shorts on Thursday, or are we doing that bit now?
Oh, no. We'll do shorty shorts on Thursday.
Okay,
we need to properly prepare for that.
I got thoughts.
Okay. Okay. But
I'm mad already.
I want to talk when we come back about a longtime member of the Football Oversight Committee. I don't believe he's on it now, but he served on it for quite a few years and helped kind of guide the conversation in that room, I'm told, because he has quite a force of personality, as you know, will understand when I say who it is. It's Kirby Smart. And Kirby Smart was on fire on Monday night. So was Mario Cristobal.
So was Mario.
They were together.
Yeah.
They were together in Gainesville, Florida, and they had jokes. We'll be right back. We are back at the College Football Inquirer, and Kirby Smart does not have to go to Indianapolis for the... Well, he's probably going for the combine anyway, because 94 of his players will be there. But he used to have to go this week because he was part of the Football Oversight Committee. I believe Brett Bielema has replaced him, Ross Dellinger tells me. But Kirby Smart was in Gainesville, Florida on Monday night. They do the Steve Spurrier Award, which is the award for the best first-year coach. They also have awards for the best freshman in college football. So the reason he was there is Ellis Robinson, his good DB, was winning the Defensive Freshman of the Year award. And then Malachi Toney, the excellent Miami receiver, was winning the Offensive Freshman of the Year award. And that, of course, brought Mario Cristobal to town. And Kirby Smart had the mic first. And I don't know if they planned for a roast.
Yeah.
So Chris Doering, former Florida receiver, is the MC of the event. His company sponsors it. And Chris is a former walk-on receiver at Florida who actually led the SEC in touchdown receptions for a career for basically until Devontae Smith broke it. So Chris tortured Kirby Smart as a player. And so Kirby, enjoying the back and forth, as Chris is trying to introduce him and ask him questions about his player, Kirby just grabs the mic and gets going. And seeing Mario in the crowd, he had some fun with this. He asked Mario, he told Ellis, hey, be careful, Mario will take your players. He said, if it had been up to him, he would have been paid a lot more NIL money. So I don't like you being real close to Mario right now. He's still got another year left. Got to be careful around Mario. Sometimes he'll take your players, if you know what I mean. And then
what do you mean? Yeah, what do you go on?
Recounts a meeting Cristobal earlier in the night. Remember, these two worked together on the Alabama staff under Nick Saban. Yeah. So Mario came up to me. He's like, you got to start getting some protein shakes in. You've had too many carbs, Smart said. So I told him, you got to spend more time around Steve Spurrier because he won more conference championships at Duke than you have at Miami. Spurrier, by the way, is sitting on a stool 5 feet away because it's his restaurant that they're at. And Spurrier is dying because, of course, he invented this.
Yeah. Yeah, taking a page out of the old ball coach's book there.
Telling Kirby he's
These two guys, as I think both of you know, are probably, I mean, every coach is passionate about winning and competitive and all that stuff. I would say that these two are at another level of coaches that I've met. Certainly, Mario wears it a little more on the sleeve. Mm-hmm. So I just really, really, really hope that at some point, maybe in the playoffs, this year, that these two team coaches will meet in a game. That would be great.
Well Mario got the mic and rubbed, decided to rub it in his way. Apparently, they just played a video highlighting Malachi Toney, the star freshman receiver, who was catching passes from Carson Beck, former Georgia quarterback who transferred to Miami. And this is what Mario said: I didn't know this was like this, but I'm glad it is. First thing I'll say, it's great right there to watch what a player like Carson Beck can do with great coaching. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Burn.
And then he said, let's give it up for Kirby Smart. I mean, if it wasn't for all his years of pre-NIL, we wouldn't have NIL right now. Robinson family, great meeting you. We leave at 9:30 on the real jet. We have more than one restaurant in Miami as opposed to Athens.
Wow. Andy, slander on the Athens. Yeah, I was about to say 5 and 10 was the first thing I was about to say. Slander to the Athens dining community.
Hugh Atchison is like, what'd I do?
Man, catching
Athens
strays.
Is great food, yeah.
In Gainesville, of all places. I love every bit of this. Okay, Andy, This kind of stuff happens, and it's going to leak out, and we live in this, we live in a social media era, but this is, we need to impart, one, hilarious, two, something that we all get to see little glimpses of by virtue of our positions, but this is also not, it's not real, right? Like, it's genuine, and they mean all this stuff, and they are highly competitive, but this was done in jest. Like, I'm already seeing this trickle out on social media this morning.
John Summerall's a stab, because it's Gainesville, and so Kirby Smart walks up to Steve Spurrier, whose daughter is a real estate agent in Gainesville, and he says, "Coach, your daughter's one of the best real estate agents in Gainesville." And Steve Spurrier's like, "That's right." And Kirby Smart goes, "John Summerall, you're the fourth Florida coach I've coached against. His daughter's making a lot of money off you guys."
It's good even when you can see the setup coming. That's good. Kirby really
Kirby's one of those. I think he's probably an all-time great ball buster, and so is Mario, which is what, like, can you imagine they end up playing the national title game and the Sunday morning press conference before the title game is this? I'd give anything for that.
that press conference sucks. It's the worst press conference of the year.
It is.
Because everybody's really tight, and they don't want to say much. They don't want to cause a scene. They don't want to cause headlines. But this would be great if we just had a roast on the Sunday morning before Monday's national championship game. The thing about the busting of you mentioned these two guys are great at sort of ribbing each other in friends and whatever. The stories of Mario from just past in Miami as sort of this like bruiser on the streets of Miami makes me think that if you bust too much, that you might actually, you know, get a bust, like a fist in your face.
Here's the thing. I would be concerned about that. Kirby Smart, former All-SEC safety, not afraid of anybody. Mario Cristobal is the coach we picked to win the Coach Royal Rumble. Like, this is the ultimate sports writer bar conversation. We have this conversation multiple times a year. Like, if a Royal Rumble breaks out between all the FBS coaches, who's winning? The answer is Mario Cristobal.
Where's he coming in, though?
Absent Ed Orgeron in the group, the answer is
Mario.
What
number is he drawing?
It doesn't matter.
I don't know. He's a bigger guy, so I think he'd need to draw 20. You don't want him to go wire to wire like Flair.
I've never booked the event. Who's Shawn Michaels then? Give me a Shawn Michaels.
Kirby's kind of like that, to be honest.
True. A little smaller, wiry.
Yeah. Are we talking? Are we booking this? Or are we going? Is this a shoot fight? We're talking about a shoot fight, right? Like actual real fight.
I'm saying a real fight.
Mario's beating a lot of ass. Yeah.
Does MMA training in the off season?
Yeah.
He is still enormous.
Right. Yeah. Mario is funnier than people give him credit for, and I think the statute of limitations on this story has expired now. But when I was like more on the beat years ago, there was a signing day at Oregon when Willie Taggart was the head coach, and Mario was his, I want to say, O-line OC coach.
OC,
and
yeah.
And it was really like the first time the coaches had all been together. They all got hired. They all immediately went out recruiting. It's 3 a.m. Pacific time. We're at Oregon in this like jet black meeting room, like Oregon's little spaceship football facility. Phil Knight's there. Mario's there, the whole crew. I want to say like Jim Levitt was on that staff. Like it was a cast of characters for sure. And do you guys remember the Lane Kiffin FAU like commercial thing he did?
Yes.
Where he was like, go out. He kind of looked like it was a hostage video, like showing proof of life.
Which he says he did on purpose, but I'm pretty sure he didn't.
Oh, he definitely did not. He was severely hungover, and let's say he was carrying some water weight, if you will. Mario
was before the Pilates and the yoga.
There was nothing hot yoga. Yeah. There was something hot seeping from the pores. But that commercial came on ESPNU, which was up on the big war room screen. And I'm not going to say what it was or what was said, but Mario ripped off a 60-second bit on that commercial that to this day is some of the best ad-lib comedy I have ever heard in my life. He's a lot funnier than people give him credit for.
Well, remember, these guys have to be able to immediately connect with people from all walks of life. That's what recruiting requires you to do.
Yes.
Most of them are pretty engaging, pretty funny. Like, Summerall's hilarious. You'll get to know him more now that he's in a more high-profile position. The guy who I always thought would be the best. And he wouldn't do it. And he told me, like, I'm not going to really unleash it unless I can really start winning, was Will Muschamp. Will Muschamp would have been the funniest football coach of all time.
Yeah.
If he had been allowed, like, he wouldn't, he was reining himself in. Like, he worshiped Steve Spurrier. Steve Spurrier was his idol. And if he had been able to win like Steve Spurrier, he would have gone after everybody. And it would have, but he's like, I haven't won enough to earn it yet. I'm not going to do it. But that guy, you get him off camera, off mic. He is the funniest.
He leaned into the idiot jock thing a little bit in his public persona, like not knowing what Yoda was or Star Wars. He wasn't that simplistic behind closed doors.
He's much smarter than
maybe the most beloved head coach by an administrator I've ever met. Everywhere Will Muschamp went, like, that's why, like, Ray Tanner had tears in his eyes when he had to fire him in South Carolina.
Jeremy Foley did too. Yeah,
like, was incredibly well loved. What we should do is, like, who could do 5 minutes at an open mic instead of the Royal Rumble? Kirby. It's
like if you watch the video from last night, Kirby, like, Chris Doering is trying to keep the show on the rails, and Kirby just steals the mic from him, and he's pacing back. He's got the timing. He's got the pacing. He knows exactly how far away from his mouth to hold the mic. Like, it is perfect. It looks like he's done it before.
I'm stumbling on something in real time, and I don't know if I'm going to cause a problem by saying this. I'm going through the personalities, with the exception of Bielema, in my head, and most of the Big Ten guys I think would die at an open mic, and a lot of the SEC guys would kill.
I feel like Cignetti would kill, but everybody would want to kill him at the end.
He's
like
Jed Tommy may Lee be Jones. All right.
Who?
Jed Fish would be great.
Jed may be
Fish,
good.
Jed would be good. Lanning. Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. There's not a lot in the room. Yeah, as far as personalities behind a mic.
Like,
yeah,
like Ryan Day, Whittingham, like Matt Campbell. Mm. That ain't happening.
Ryan Day is too normal. Like, Ryan Day is the most normal human being for a high, you know, superpower head coach. The guys in the SEC are psychopaths.
Yeah, but they're funnier. I'm just realizing this now. They're funnier.
Yeah, they definitely are. Little more characters and personality, for sure.
The ACC's got some guys. Because Manny Diaz is awesome on the mic.
Mm-hmm. He's got a broadcast background. It's almost like he's not allowed, you know?
He's not even fair.
Dabo would... behind the mic?
Dabo would be amazing.
He just does it in a press conference.
I don't know. Dabo...
regularly.
It'd be a clean set.
Maybe
Dabo could Nate Bargatze it though. Like, Dabo could have you rolling.
Don't insult. I guess. Yeah. I was gonna say, don't insult Nate Bargatze. Like, he does a very impressive job because he is clean. I mean, there's a couple duds in the South. I'm not saying it's like it's 1-1, but you know,
B2O Joey would be good. And
yeah, Joey McGuire would be awesome.
Just run your show. Joey,
if you had
really
to be a high school coach,
personable,
Gus Malzahn, if you because Gus would never let us see the whole personality. Mm-hmm. Gus could be fun, but Joey would be more fun. If we're going with the guys who started out as high school coaches,
Arizona State would be
Sonny
good
Dykes
too.
Would be really good.
Sonny would be good and dry, just like Cignetti. It would be pretty funny though. Yeah,
Sonny Dykes. Sonny gave me 15 minutes on why he liked the Cal job when he was obviously telling me with his face that he didn't, and it was one of the best. I didn't use any of it, but it was one of the best tongue in cheek dry. It was like a skit. It was like something from Mr. Show where he was just telling me one thing and his face was telling me the exact opposite. Once he found out I was from the South, he was like, "Oh, it's fantastic here in Berkeley. I have total support." And just his eyes would just get bigger and bigger.
I'm just like imagining. Can we do SEC Whose Line Is It Anyway?
I think they would win.
Who's Wayne Brady?
Yeah, I think
who's Ryan Stiles?
If we're doing by league, they would win.
Dude, you know who, I know this because of personal off-field connections, but like Golding is pretty funny. Golding is like it's, you know, it's a particular style of humor. But
Kiffin would have to work on his set. I don't know that Kiffin would improv as well.
No.
Kirby would be a Kirby, Shane Beamer, Summerall, very good improv guys.
Summerall is way better. I know Andy's already said really this. Good. Summerall is like, I spent time with him when he was at Troy. Like, he can break balls. He's really funny.
Yeah.
Oh, Will Stein maybe?
Yeah, I think Will Stein, he's one that has not quite shown his personality yet.
Yeah.
People are going to like him. people are going to very much enjoy Will Stein.
I don't want to be mean to Clark Lee, but if it's there, I haven't seen it yet. He's a sweetheart. I don't know
Clark
if
Clark Lee's a very cerebral guy. That's probably not his environment.
No.
So, but man,
this is good.
Drink is good. I mean, we've seen Drink do it in the press conference with Dan Mullen.
Drink would be
the top of the list. Yeah,
Drink is a likable Dan Mullen, which is that's an oxymoron.
next, well, and of course, they went at each other. The greatest quote ever.
Way too similar.
Was about Dan Mullen.
Yeah, right.
Refresh me.
Right, that's where we've seen the busting of the balls.
He's so jackass.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah,
he's better than people. Yeah, he's better than people. Golish might be too. We don't know yet. I think when Golish can calm down, he's in a weird situation with the culture there. But like, I think Golish might be funny.
Oh
too.
Yeah, he's fun. Now he's pretty intense, but he's funny.
Yeah,
very intense.
So there you have it, folks.
There you go.
The Big Ten has three national titles in a row, but the SEC's funnier.
They got to come around on the characters.
Here's the deal, though. It's much like on the field. The SEC has a bunch of hitters. Brett Bielema can murder. That dude walked into an interview with me one time. We had a one-on-one in spring football. And he walked in barefoot and he goes, "You ever been sunburned on the top of your feet?" That's how he introduced himself, because he was walking barefoot through the facility. Like, that guy
sounds
can
like
kill
him.
On every level. Like, Bielema for sure.
We'll have our definitive coach comedy rankings on Thursday. No, but we will be talking about shorts.
We kind of just did. Yeah,
I promise you that.
Somebody's going to hear this, and one of us is going to get a text, and one of us is going to be like,
probably,
"I can't believe you didn't mention me." Like, we have inadvertently hurt someone's feelings.
We were going to get one from Drink, and we saved ourselves. So there you go.
Yeah, probably.
Get ready for the short shorts conversation, because I know you're laughing. You're thinking, "Oh, Andy's kidding about this." No. Actual important college football people have spent hours talking about short shorts.
Save
we
priorities.
Should explain why at
priorities.
Some point. I don't
save
know if it'll be important enough
short
to talk about Thursday. We will.
Save the short shorts.
I'm going to go roll mine up right now. We'll talk to you Thursday.